So, hey, what's up? Welcome to Mise en Scène. My name is John Fink.
Hi, I'm Lacey Ellenwood.
And so what we do is, if you're listening to this for the third time we were doing this, if you're not used to hearing Mike Reif, we're doing kind of a rotating cast of characters, almost like when Gene Siskel died, but Mike Reif isn't dead. He's very much alive and well in Auburn, and so we're bringing on some interesting voices from the Buffalo film community here. And Lacey, what's going on? So introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm a close friend of John's. I'm in the same sort of department. Areas are art history and film, specifically photography, and probably, I don't know. I'm a big fan of all kinds of films.
All kinds of films. Yeah, no, I mean, it was funny because, like, we always talk about, like, Bellatar and all these other ones, and the first one we went to go see together was Justin Timberlake movie. Yeah,
Friends with Benefits.
Yeah.
I don't, I'm a cinephile, but I'm one that will definitely be going to see the latest American Pie film that's going to be coming out this Friday.
Yeah, so, I mean, my
nose isn't too high up in the air.
Well, I mean, it's like one of those things you grew up with. It's sort of like, I described it last time as like, you know, a mom and apple pie. I described it as Simpsons and Howard Stern. Those are like two things I grew up with. No matter how they change and evolve, I still like, they're still like comfort food, right?
I was just about to equate it to, I like to eat pork belly, but I am just as big a fan of boxed macaroni and cheese, so.
Boxed macaroni and cheese. You think macaroni and cheese is one of those things that ever going to become like upscale, where like you'd have,
well, you can have upscale mac and cheese, but there's nothing wrong with a box of Kraft and a stick of butter, so.
Okay. So what have you been working on lately?
I just got back from the Cleveland International Film Festival. It actually just wrapped up April 1st. It ran March 22nd to April 1st.
Cool.
I hit the first weekend of it. It was a great festival. It's getting better every single year. I equate it to the Rust Belt can, is what I like to call it.
No, they were showing some good stuff there. Some stuff that is... had already played at other festivals. I know Tyrannosaur was there. I saw that at TIFF. I'm not really sure what else. You said you saw a lot of good stuff there.
I did. The first film that I actually... Well, you know what? The best film that I saw while I was at the film festival was one that I just happened upon the second day I was there on a Saturday. It was in the middle of the afternoon. It was a 2:30 movie, and it was a documentary by Kirby Dick.
Mm-hmm.
Who did, this film was not yet rated, I think, back in 06.
Yep, and Sick, that was the other one he did,
yep,
too.
Yep, and Sick, and it's called The Invisible War. You might have heard some press about it. There was a thing about it on NPR, and it's about sexual assault in the military. Super heavy topic. It's mostly interviews with women, but some men talking about... different experiences that these individuals have had in the military, how they've been assaulted, and what the government has not done to protect them or, you know, protect their rights.
And I'm looking to see what its screening history was.
It was at Sundance.
It was at Sundance, okay.
It was at Sundance, and it is getting picked up for wide distribution, and it will be featured on PBS in the next year, is what the producer told us in the screening.
Great. Is it something that you think, like, audiences are really going to connect with? You think it's going to be one of these movies that's going to kind of, like, come out and be a hit?
I think so. I mean, at least I hope so. It's a big issue, and there's been a lot of recent news press and, news in the past about sexual assaults in the military and how they're being covered up. And I equate the film to kind of like an Errol Morris standard operating procedure, but the film's done more in the style of like Barbara Coppola's, Harlan County.
Okay.
As far as, there aren't reenactments in the film, it's more of just straight on interviews.
Sort of talking heads kind of thing.
Yeah, with victims.
No, Kirby Dick, he just certainly knows how to make a good film. Is he a presence in it, like the way he was in this movie's not yet rated, or is he sort of like largely off screen?
He's all off screen. There's nobody really. You'll hear an interviewer's voice, but it's not overwhelming. It's really featuring the stories and the victims.
And so, what was the audience reaction to it?
People were. Crying and bawling. I mean, 10 minutes into the film, And it was just constant throughout it. Like I said, it was a middle of the afternoon, big downer, you know, you got out of there and it was like, wow. You know, walking back through out of the film, there were people just crying in doorways, and it was very intense. And they had one of the interviewees there who was from Ohio come mm-hmm. and talk about her experience, and she brought her family with her. So.
Does it get into some of the misconduct with the contractors that were sort of involved with these things, or they're sort of now being found guilty of covering these things up?
The
contractors and not necessarily the military, or is it just strictly focused on the military?
It's strictly focused on the military. One of the most interesting statements that came out of while watching the film was a bunch of these women had banded together and were suing the military for, you know, wrongdoing or whatever, mm-hmm. and it was brought to Supreme Court and all this stuff, and the ruling was that it was an occupational hazard. For these women.
Oof.
To be raped was an
occupational hazard.
An occupational hazard. And that was probably one of the, you know, one thing that I don't think a lot of people, you know about is that there was this ruling stating that these women were at fault. You joined the military, you should have known that this was going to happen.
Wow. That's insane that there's not is there anybody from the military actively that kind of goes on and talks about that, or talks any sort of perspective from the administration, perhaps?
There was this. She looked like a Dallas housewife that had had too much plastic surgery. She had to probably be in her 60s, and she was the head of this campaign to bring about awareness in the military mm-hmm. about what people can do to stop this. And a lot of it was focused on the victims. Well, you shouldn't be walking around alone on base. You should always have a buddy with you. Well, mm-hmm. you shouldn't need to have a buddy to be fearing for your life, you know, walking around. And they equate it to the victims experiencing the same sorts of trauma that incest victims experience, because mm-hmm. the military is such a strong family-based sort of tight-knit group that when you are assaulted by somebody in that group, it's like being assaulted by your family.
Wow. So what else did you see that you like? What else did I? That seems like the one
I saw another documentary, actually. It was the first night, and it's the complete and total opposite of that film.
More of a lighthearted comedy? Or
no, it was horrible. It was lighthearted in nature, but it was just like everything great that was that Invisible War had, this film lacked. And that film was called No Room for Rock Stars. And
okay.
It was about it pretty much just followed several different bands on the Vans Warped Tour in 2010.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was actually screened like out of competition at South by Southwest. It was sort of screening. That's right, I remember getting an invite for the press, but it wasn't part of the official festival, so. Not that I ignored it.
Frankly,
but,
I can see why. It was, you know, it's like the director took a clip notes about documentary film and put those into their film as cliches. I guess the one phrase that I could describe the film, it was caricatures and not characters. You
mm-hmm.
really didn't feel much for anybody in the film. You really didn't care.
Was it just a concert film, or was it a...
No, I mean, it followed several different types of musicians that were in the festival, and then, like, the one possible saving grace for the film was that it was following this young group of guys that were trying to get on the Warped Tour, selling
mm-hmm.
their CDs out in front of the show, following the tour around in their broken-down van, like, in the Uta venue, and they actually happened to be playing at Kent
uh-huh.
State that night, and they ended up being there
they
at the end.
Up, yeah.
Yeah, and they were super great guys. They were really personable.
Oh, you can talk shit about them. That's okay.
No, they were.
It's okay.
They were the only saving grace. But like the climax of the film, like the only emotional part of this film, was when these four teenage guys that have been smelly and living in a van for like 4 weeks are just break down and start crying.
Really?
And it was like, why am I watching these 20-year-old guys crying? Like, it didn't really... I mean, it made sense, but it was just
because they
like,
got to the van, like, the Warped Tour? Is it,
no,
like, is it like a Kim Jong-il
no,
thing, or
no,
is it...
No, the van broke down. They were crying because what the hell were they going to do? How are they going to get to the next day? How are they going to get home? And that was, you know, and I enjoyed the film, but the only reason I enjoyed it is because I used to go to the Warped Tour. So it's kind of nice to see, but it really didn't offer
anything. Didn't offer any different perspective
new.
Of the Warped Tour.
No, nothing. Nothing new.
That's a shame. I see it was produced by Stacey Peralta, who's done some good work, you know, Dogtown and Z-Boys, and that was that surf movie he did too, that...
I saw that at the end, and I was like, oh, really? I'm like, God, I should, you know, I probably shouldn't have seen the film. The director has two R's in their first name. It's like Paris.
Paris, with two R's. Paris Patton, what a name.
Sounds like a porn star's name.
Maybe he or she was. Is it a man or a woman? Was he or she there?
No, nobody was there except for these four kids that were crying by their band.
Really? Okay. I mean, it looks like Paris Patton's done some other films and videos. I don't really know his work. Editor for a couple things. But, all right, I'll take your word for it. I will avoid No River Rockstars.
It was flashy in name, but that
I think
was
it's
about
on,
it.
It's on YouTube. It's on, not YouTube, it's on iTunes, I just saw.
Is it?
No. Yeah. I've been catching up with things that I missed. I was away at South by Southwest. I've been catching up with kind of a little bit of what's new and kind of keeping tracks. I eventually went to go see 21 Jump Street and Hunger Games and Friends with Kids and all those movies that
I love. 21 Jump Street.
You love 21 Jump Street.
I did. It was dirt. I went on a screening and early, probably like a month and a half ago. It was great. It was dirty and it was funny and definitely not appropriate for the 5-year-old kids that were also at the screening.
Sometimes those parents kind of take those kids there and it's not good.
Yeah.
We used to do that. I mean, I don't know what it was. If it was sort of like a lack of image or something, I don't know what it was.
It was enjoyable. It was my box mac and cheese.
It was your box mac and cheese?
It was box mac and cheese.
Like Johnny Depp, but not really Johnny. Well,
I don't want any spoilers or anything like that for anybody that might eventually see it. But I don't think anybody that's listening to your podcast really is going to go see 21 Jump Street.
I don't know. I mean, maybe. Who knows? This could become an international phenomenon. Yeah, and the other movie that I'm looking forward to desperately is what Stillman's new movie, which...
That's right.
We're waiting 14 years for him to make a new movie.
Yep.
Can't believe it's been 14 years, but he was one of those... He is also one of those that I would describe as, like, the box mac and cheese, but although with some substance. He's sort of like the gourmet box mac and cheese from Whole Foods versus, like... You know,
I'd give him a little bit more than that, you know? Like, I went to Lager House, which is right down the street. You should eat there. And they had a mac and cheese that had... a duck in it, but then it had, like, goldfish on the top of it. So it was, like, it was playful, and yet...
Wow.
So I would give him a little bit more than the Annie's all-natural box mac and cheese
I mean, I grew up watching his movies as, like, a teenager. Like, I think all of my psychoses and problems, I think, stem from maybe, like, Barcelona, I think. I think that really is, like, the key to my entire psyche, is that something went horribly wrong. I was at a film festival seeing this movie that was sort of like a stupid horror movie that these kids made called Because of George Romero. It was a local film festival in New Jersey. And I was, like, thinking to myself, I should just do a movie called Because of Whit Stillman about, like, somebody who's perpetually in a weird feedback loop about his life, and he's afraid that he can change himself, or he can change his context, but not himself.
Yeah.
I think so. But Dance with the Stress, I mean, it's the kind of film that I wouldn't normally... rush out and see, but it is with Stillman, and I've heard some excellent reviews of it so far.
And, you know, I like Mumblecore Girl. What's her name?
Greta Gerwig.
Yeah.
Mumblecore Girl.
Yeah, she did a bunch of, like, Mumblecore films before she did House of the Devil.
I know.
Which I want to see Innkeepers. I'm waiting for it.
Ty West, yeah.
I got to pick it up.
I wasn't really a Mumblecore guy, but he just kind of fell in with those. It's sort of that.
Well, she did them before she did, like, you know,
Jeff
Greenberg
Fongos, yeah.
and House of the Devil,
so... Well, Greenberg, to me, seems like the most mumblecore of a studio movie. Although, speaking of mumblecore, I saw the other... There's two new Duplass movies in 2012 that dropped in 2012. I saw Jeff Who Lives at Home last night, which... have you seen it yet?
I haven't seen it yet. I might go tonight.
It's strange. It's like a Duplass Brothers movie with, like action set pieces. Not really, like, big action set pieces. But it's weird, because, like, you normally, you know, like, the sort of the charm of the Duplass Brothers is you sort of look at their movies and go... Okay, I can make this. Me and my friends can make this with our camera. Of course, we really couldn't. But, you know, like, Puffy Chair especially, you're almost like, okay, like, this is one. Get five friends together, charge up the HD camera, let's go out and shoot it. This one, though, has got, you know, actual crashes and piece at the end I won't give away, but it's a really good flick. I liked it a lot. It's sort of a maturing and evolving of their work in a weird kind of way, almost a little with maybe a little bit more restraint. I thought they were lost after Baghead. I was afraid. Mm. Baghead was one of those movies I saw twice.
Hoping that
actually the first time I liked it for some reason, and then the second time I went to go see it again, I was hyping it up. I was like, yeah, we should go see Baghead. And I just was like, what did I see in this movie the first time? Was I just like in some sort of weird state of euphoria? I think it was at the Tribeca Film Festival where I saw it. And I was just like in a weird sort of state of euphoria. And then I went to go see it again, and I was like, oh, this isn't very good at all. I'm sorry. So, you know, then Cyrus kind of, you know, redemptive. But,
yeah. Cyrus. It was okay. I take it or leave it. It was, you know.
Okay.
I had higher expectations, I guess.
Their other one, which also has Mark Zisis, who's sort of like their, you know, like, the, I don't know, I guess he's one of their stock characters, one of their stock leading men. He was in Baghead. The other one is Dodecapethlon, which is about two brothers that have a private 25-game Olympic competition that they stopped when they were 12 because one of their aunts pulled them out of the pool when they stopped breathing during the hold your breath. So they called it a draw, and then now in their late 30s, early 40s, they're reviving this Olympic competition to prove who the best son is. But it was one of those, it was weird. So I talked to the guy that's distributing the movie, a guy from Red Flag Releasing, Paul, something with an F, his last name, very nice guy. And they're partnering with Fox Searchlight, who's going to take the international. And he said, it's a little bit smaller of a movie than Fox Searchlight would normally release, but they're going to be, you know, so they're going to be kind of handling the domestic, I guess, end of it. And Fox will be handling more of the international stuff. So it should be interesting to see how that comes out, because they're certainly becoming, or they're cusping on household names.
Yeah.
Which is sort of strange to me, because it's, you know, the new one, Jack Who Lives at Home, is very much still, like, dealing with some of the same themes of arrested development and people that are sort of locked in that, like, adolescent period. They're sort of grappling with that. I don't know if they're ever going to... Hopefully they will, like, do something else.
Well, I'll be looking forward to seeing the one... You saw that at South by Southwest?
Dodeca, yeah. Dodeca was at South by, and I think it's going to be coming out... I don't know if there's a release date for it yet, but it should be coming out this year, I think. And I'm not sure if it's going to be... Because Dodeca was one they shot right after Baghead. Basically, those guys were like, let's do another movie. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll just get our friends together, we'll do another movie. And it's a lower budget kind of film. Actually, one of the set pieces from Dodeca ends up in Jeff Who Lives at Home. So they had done Cyrus and Jeff, and then this one, they had it finished, but they hadn't edited or they hadn't kind of like honed it. And so it's seeing the light of day. It's sort of like a movie that's been, you know, in a time cap. It's been on ice for 4 years. So you sort of see that these sort of themes reemerge as of some of their work anyway. But mm-hmm. Yeah, Baghead, I didn't really... It's one of those movies that doesn't get better with repeat viewing.
So with the recent startup again of Game of Thrones, I need to talk about this awesome Norwegian film that I saw.
Go ahead. I don't watch Game of Thrones.
You're missing out on the Game of Thrones front.
Okay.
So I saw this film called Headhunters, I won't be able to pronounce that guy's name. His name is Jamie in Game of Thrones, and he's in this film, and it's a thriller heist, and it centers around this guy who's a headhunter, and he ends up...
As in an executive recruiter or an actual, like, headhunter?
He's an executive recruiter.
He's an executive recruiter. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, I get it. It's a plan word.
Yes. Ha, 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 ha.
It's a thriller about a headhunter.
But, so, he's married to, like, this supermodel gorgeous wife, and to keep her happy, he feels like, because he's a short man and she's gorgeous, that he needs to make a lot of money and buy her a lot of stuff. Well, he ends up having to steal high-end art to do this, so that's what he does, is he kind of uses this executive recruiting aspect of his life to weed out people that have fine art, and then he goes into their homes and steals it and sells it and puts in reproductions of it back into their home. So he ends up trying to recruit the guy that plays Jamie in Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. and it turns into the other phrase of headhunting, and it's just, you know, high action, really great, and I have a feeling that it's going to be the next in a long line of American ripoffs of great Scandinavian film.
Yeah, Summit Entertainment actually has already bought the rights to produce the American remake, so...
It's, well, there you go.
It'll be coming out this year via Magnolia Pictures. I'm not sure if they'll probably do one of those video on demand, and then it'll come to theaters.
It's really sad because
it's good.
It's really good, and it's the same thing with, you know, films like Let the Right One In and the Swedish Girl with the Dragon Tattoo movies. They're so superior to the American versions.
So you think the American versions are unnecessary?
They don't offer anything new and only water it down to it's for Americans who don't like to read, you know,
yeah.
People who can't be bothered to read subtitles. So, but if they, you know, when they do remake Headhunters for the U.S. audience, I really want them to cast Steve Buscemi as like the headhunter, the guy who's the short executive guy who steals art.
So
I just saw
it.
Well, if I was to cast the film. It would,
Who would be the wife, though?
Diana Kruger, maybe?
Oh, wow. Steve Buscemi and Diana Kruger. That's an odd combo.
But
that's
it's
like,
an odd combo in
Angelina
the film.
Angelina Jolie and Dilly Bob. It's an odd combo.
Yeah.
It's a little weird. It's a little weird.
Well, she was a little weird. He was a little weird. I kind of got it.
Yes, yeah, I mean, who wore the vial of whose blood around their neck? Or?
They each wore a vial of each other's blood, I think.
Very charming, very charming. Wow.
So, yes.
Does Brad Pitt do that now, you think, or?
I don't even want to know what sort of...
Okay.
It makes me question Brad Pitt's sexual sanity sometimes.
Well, I mean, I get it, but, you
Dude,
know.
I don't know,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
she's too skinny. She's gotten to the point where she's too skinny.
Okay. If you say something.
I don't know. Maybe if you like to get jabbed in every part of your body.
I think it's actually been a while. Her new movie didn't come to town either, unfortunately.
The
Lot of Blood and Honey. We didn't get that one. And the B-Lo.
I think she is what was holding that film back.
Really?
I think that it was great subject matter.
Did you see it? Or?
No.
Okay.
From the little that I've read, the trailers that I've seen, it looked great. I was really into it. And I think that, you know, because she's attached to it, it comes with some sort of stigma. The dirt from The Tourist is latched onto that film.
Well, The Tourist actually, weirdly, because we can talk about how, like, that there's sort of a new model of filmmaking and that this international box office really plays as much a part, if not more of a part, than the domestic box office does nowadays. So a movie like The Tourist really wasn't that big of a hit there. Actually, I was doing some research on this. Tourist, I think, was produced by this division of Sony called the Sony Pictures Worldwide Acquisition Group. And according to Wikipedia, where I read this, they, which has got to be correct, what they do is they acquire a movie with the intention of putting it direct to video. And then they run an analysis to figure out how much it would make, it's pretty brilliant, how much it would make if it, more on video if it had a theatrical release. And if they determined that it would actually be beneficial, then they offer it up to the Sony branches and say, so Columbia, Sony Classics, TriStar, Screen Gems, do you want to release it? If they say no, that they don't see a release pattern, they don't know how to market it, they've got their slate too full, they give it over to... another partner of theirs. So, like, they have, like, Samuel Goldwyn and Roadside Attractions, and those are, like, kind of partners of theirs. So they give them over to, you know, those companies and say, you know, would you like to release the movie for us? And, you know, that's kind of how they build that buzz, so it gets it reviewed, and then they still see that value in that theatrical, not the day-and-date thing, which sadly is becoming more and more of the new model, which I think is bad for places like Buffalo, where we're both based out of, because we don't have the benefit of then, it becomes day and date, and then there's not the encouragement to make prints and to have them, those prints travel, especially for the IFC films, so we don't get to see things that, in a theater. I mean, we can see them on demand, but we don't get to see them
on
a movie
Netflix,
theater.
Yeah.
On Netflix, yeah, I mean, that's still a little bit later on, but we don't get to go see them in a big old movie theater like the North Park or Eastern Hills.
Yeah.
North Park's uncomfortable.
You know my feeling. I only sit in the fire exit row because it's got enough leg room.
I went there to go see the Tilda Swinton movie the day, and we were all the way up in front, which was nice. I mean, it was a nice big screen, although it was kind of, the screen was dirty. They had a big splotch in the middle of it.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, beautiful food though. They got they should just rest. They should just restore it. So anyway, what else is going on?
Oh God! Well, we both went and saw The Hunger Games.
The Hunger Games. Yeah. What'd you think?
I enjoyed it. I must admit, I am a librarian, and I did not read the books, so I cannot make a book to film sort of analysis. But I had heard of all this buzz again on NPR about the violence in the film and how it was, you know, I can't believe that their kids are watching this. It's so violent, and I guess I just didn't see it. It wasn't overtly gory by any means.
There was that one scene of where they're sort of that Braveheart scene where they first begin the Hunger Games. It was a little
true. A little intense. That but was you're a not getting intense. You're not getting close ups really. And yeah.
No, there was some blood though in that scene. There was that one was kind of I think close to the edge, but.
And then you got all this race stuff that's coming up around the film too about you know. The death of two of the African American characters and how
were they wearing racist. Hoodies and walking around Stanford, Florida?
No, they weren't. But I mean, even in the books, they're described as being that way. They weren't, you know, they didn't specifically cast African Americans to be the people that died in the film, which is how I think a lot of people are.
You know, you could read a Nazi subtext into it, because, you know, the one that ends up winning, which we're probably not giving away anything from the poster, is, you know, she's got blonde hair and blue eyes, right? She's, like, sort of the Nazi poster child.
And I would, and she's wearing the, she comes from, like, a worker's, like, she's got that coal uniform sort of look, you know, because she's from the coal.
Communist. Yeah, maybe. Communist. Oh, wow, all this subtext into this movie, I mean, I'm sure it's already been there, or I'm sure film scholars will be reviewing this.
Oh, of course.
Perhaps, or scholars of the book.
There is nothing new.
There's never anything new.
What about you?
What about me? What did I see? Well, I saw the Jeff Who Lives at Home flick last night, and I've been catching up. What else did I see this weekend that really kind of struck me? We need to talk about Kevin. Do we need to talk about Kevin?
We should. I don't have much to say since I have not seen it.
Oh,
but
man.
You should talk about it because
I went with two very intelligent people to see it. They hated it.
They hated it?
They absolutely hated it. And I thought it was me, and then other people like on my Facebook page were telling me, "No, it was a good flick. You're right.
You're not nuts." Insane.
No, I think they were offended, which was strange because they were offended by the fact that it was dealing with these maternal issues and that there was these images of red and it just kind of hit you over the head with it a bit. But I think they were really offended by sort of the imagery and the fact that it was a woman filmmaker, that they were like, how could a woman filmmaker have made this movie that's so, like, misogynistic, which I don't know if I really read that into the film, but they were really, like, upset with the movie. They actually wanted to walk out at a certain point, which was fascinating because they're two very smart folks, my buddy Isaac and his girlfriend Lauren, but they really did not care for the movie. In fact, I should have Isaac on next to defend him, to really hold him to account.
Yes.
Do a little Piers Morgan on him, try to get him to crack as to why he really didn't like the movie. I thought it was well done, really sort of skillfully made. It did kind of work as an edgy receipt thriller. It's one of those movies where you're disoriented and you're not really sure what's going on, and then slowly it all kind of comes together. Like, she's got really a very strong command, particularly in the images, to kind of keep you engrossed in it. It's It's one of those things that should really have a wider release than it has. It should be one of those movies where, like, those people that like those Japanese horror movies should go out and see it, because it's got, like, kind of like an art house Japanese horror movie edge to it in some way. It's maybe a little oversimplifying, but those movies I don't understand.
Should we talk about what's coming out for the summer?
Or what's coming out? What are you looking forward to this month?
Well, we can talk about what's coming out this week. But it's never too early to start thinking about
big summer action movies.
Big summer,
well,
yeah.
Yes. Well, of course, we've got Titanic 3D, which is Roger Ebert basically said the 3D was unnecessary.
Yeah, it seems pretty ridiculous. I think the only 3D film I've ever gone to see was The Watchmen, and I did not need 3D Big Blue Dawn for a lot of the film.
I don't remember that being in 3D, but maybe it was.
Maybe, or I saw it in IMAX.
Oh, yeah. So you got the life-size experience.
Life-size.
More than life-size. Yes. I'm looking to see what's coming out. I mean, there's Steve Hart. It's actually a pretty good month for comedy. We have 5-Year Engagement. We have Damsels in Distress, of course.
5-Year Engagement. I'm pretty excited about.
Steve Harvey's Think Like a Man. That looks pretty funny. Mm-hmm. The Three Stooges, which looks kind of atrocious.
I saw a trailer for that, and it was just horrible.
And, of course, American Reunion, which we're both looking forward to. Yes. Now, coming out further this summer, I know The Avengers is one of those movies that, like, all the big fanboys are lining up for.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
God Bless America, too, is coming out on May 11th, which is very sick. And...
Oh, yeah, I've seen the trailer. I doubt it'll come here, but...
It might. I saw it at Toronto, and it had an opening during the Midnight Madness program in Toronto, and it was really interesting to see it in Canada. But the crazy story is, so a couple nights later, or actually like a week later, I'm at Midnight Madness again, seeing, I forget the name of the movie, it was a Japanese horror, Japanese action movie, and they had an actual 35mm print at Ryerson, and the projector, they just couldn't get it to work. So Colin Geddes, have you been to Midnight Madness?
Yeah.
Okay, so Colin Geddes comes out, and he goes, oh, I'm sorry, you know, he's like, but, you know, let's play some more beach ball, and, you know, we'll hang out some more for another 20 minutes. He comes on again, this is at, 12:40, and goes, we still have problems. Everyone starts booing in the audience. He goes, hang on, but I got a surprise for you. Bobcat Goldthwait's going to save my ass. So he comes out, he does about, like, 20 minutes of stand-up. And so the whole time he's like looking over, he's just like improvising. He goes over to Colin, and he goes, he's like giving him a thumbs up, and he goes, no, five more minutes. So finally the movie gets going at 1 o'clock in the morning, which was exhausting, but you know, he did some stand up about the festival, which was cool. I'm trying to think what else is coming out. G.I. Joe Retaliation, I saw the trailer for that last night.
Nah.
No, not even with Bruce Willis.
I don't think Bruce can save it for me.
Brave, I'm not sure about that one. There's a new trailer out for that one.
That definitely caught my interest. The kid in me was interested in seeing that.
How about Rock of Ages? Are you looking forward to that one?
Oh my god, no, I hate musicals, but like, I feel like I need to see Tom Cruise imitating Axl Rose, which is just like...
Apparently, they're doing a new A Star Is Born. Apparently they've revealed that Cobain is going to be the jumping off point. Clint Eastwood's directing that one.
That's going to be interesting. Who's set to play? Do you know? I don't know.
It's over at the Film Stage, which is a great site I write for, and was the reason I was down at South By. But yeah, they've announced that, so that's on the horizon. There's a couple of things.
Some big shoes to fill, though, too. Christopherson, that's gonna be hard, you know.
Uh huh.
I'm not even talking about Barbara. I could give two shits, but Christopherson, yeah, that's gonna be hard to find somebody.
I think so.
I think it'll be easier to fill.
So who would you choose to remake that or to be
to star? Is it Christopherson? Well. That's hard. Somebody in their mid-30s, probably.
Ben Affleck.
No, he's got to have some sort of singing. Singing ability.
It doesn't look like they've revealed any of the cast. I think it's maybe still in the pre-production stages. Mm-hmm. But apparently it's going to be it's really about Kurt Cobain, the way that Velvet Goldmine was really about David Bowie.
That's what it's going to be?
I don't know, maybe. I mean, we'll have to see when the trailer comes out. It could be like the heterosexual Velvet Goldmine.
Get Michael Pitt to do it.
Yeah, you know, he's already done Cobain, though.
I know, but
You need somebody like, maybe Taylor Hansen can play Cobain. Or one of the Hansen brothers. They've got the long blonde hair, too.
They're not going to want to get all gritty for it. They can't even grow facial hair.
Sure they will. They got the voice for it.
No,
bopping. Okay, fair enough.
Can't think of it. Because they've got to be somewhat wiry and blonde, dirty blonde.
How about Jennifer Lawrence? She'll do it.
She'll be the male part?
She'll do it, yeah. I mean, I can imagine Jennifer Lawrence. Now she's a good actress.
She's good.
Yeah.
You can't see it in Hunger Games. You can see it in Winter's Bone, but, you know.
I thought she was pretty convincing in Hunger Games. Okay.
It was okay. It wasn't like it was some big, you know, acting leap or anything.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I got no love for the acting ability of Jennifer Lawrence in Hunger Games.
Really?
Apparently.
What else has she been in?
She was in The Beaver.
Oh, yeah.
Or just Beaver, or whatever.
The Mel Gibson one.
Yep.
Yeah, that one, that was interesting.
Funded by the United Arab Emirates.
Well, yeah, Image, what's it, Abu Dhabi, yeah. Well, that was one that it never came to, it came to Buffalo.
It did. I think that was the only one.
Do you know where it played? You remember where it played?
Wasn't it at the Eastern Hills for like a week? No, where did it
worse, go? It was at Movie Land. It came and opened right at our discount theater.
No.
And left for a week. It left in a week.
I didn't see it at Movie Land. I saw it here, but I saw it, I'm pretty sure I saw it at the Eastern Hills. You missed it. Alright, you're talking about the Polanski film that was, I think, started at the Movie Land. And
oh, no, Carnage actually started in a really weird, obscure place in the burbs.
Oh, yeah.
I saw it by myself in a very small auditorium at the Regal in Orchard Park.
Yeah, I saw that it was here and I was like, oh, I gotta go see that, and then I never did.
Yeah, it was out for like a week, and I can imagine why. I was the only one in the theater. It was kind of strange that never. I guess they were too. Our art houses were too busy with the artist and George Clooney. Yeah.
Descendants?
Yeah, they held on to those movies, and all of a sudden we're getting this glut of, like,
the
stuff that's playing.
Well, I guess
for
we can talk about I just saw it, The Descendants. It was okay.
It's been a while. Yeah.
It didn't really blow my lid.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Didn't pop my top.
What about The Artist?
You know what? It was a very lackluster year for me as far as what I was wowed by.
I'll tell you, I'm not happy that he won Best Achievement in Directing.
Yeah.
Which is what the Oscar for Best Director is called, is Best Achievement in Directing, because he basically re-achieved what Charlie Chaplin did back in, with Modern Times.
This is true.
It wasn't any, it was an enjoyable film, but it wasn't revolutionary by any means.
Well, we've had this discussion before, that the Oscars was full of things that just were kind of,
Well, Hollywood, they love to sort of see themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Which is okay, I suppose. Right? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. So we got another reboot coming up, too. Amazing Spider-Man coming out later this summer.
Oh, yeah.
With Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man.
No.
Not even Emma Stone?
No. I could say something derogatory about what I think she looks like, but...
Whoa, go ahead.
She kind of looks like she has a little bit of Downs.
Oh, what's that? Well, no, she's very pretty in real life.
Her eyes are just, they're freaking me out, man.
Okay.
If you say so.
There's apparently, and I didn't know about this, but I'm looking at the schedule ahead, a Katy Perry documentary coming out called Katy Perry Part of Me that Paramount is releasing on July 5th.
Is that supposed to be like the Beaver movie, but with Katy Perry?
What would that be rated?
It depends.
How many sparks are
coming out of her boobs? Her outfit choices.
I wonder, because Beep was very wholesome, and I wonder if Katie is going to be in 3D or not. Katie,
yeah, Perry, I can only hope.
Part of Me.
Now, have you seen the trailer for this To Rome with Love with Jesse Eisenberg? And
I have not. What is?
I just it was on IMDb and on the front page, and I was like, I like Jesse Eisenberg. I like. What's her face? Juno.
I love little Juno. I'd knock her up.
Hard Candy is still one of my...
Well, not in Hard Candy.
I love
run the other
candy.
Way in Hard Candy.
I love
candy.
That film.
I love Whippet, actually. That's my favorite little...
I have Whippet as well.
Whippet is wonderful, yeah.
I think it got a lot of flack.
Really? I'm surprised... You know, it's one of those movies I'm surprised that it wasn't, like, universally embraced by... Every teenage girl in America.
I know, right?
I don't know what's wrong with
I don't
these
know
kids
what's wrong
today.
With teenage girls these days.
There's kids today.
I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, it was funny. It was when I first moved to Buffalo, and my mom went to go see it, and we both went to go see the sneak preview of it because we were like so stoked to see it. And then we called each other on the way, both on our respective ways home from the theater, 300 miles away, and we both loved it. And I was like, "It's going to be a big hit," and then it like never really evolved into anything.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately.
Oh, it's Woody Allen.
Woody Allen. Oh, yeah.
I might now have just boycotted the film. As much as my interest has peaked.
You boycott Woody Allen.
I'm not the biggest fan. And the biggest chodes always go to the film, his film, so I've never...
Did you boycott Midnight in Paris?
Yep, haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
I just recently saw Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
Well.
And that was bad.
You didn't like it?
Didn't do anything for me.
Yeah. It was kind of... It kind of was... Yeah, I don't know. You could say an old pervert, maybe. But Midnight in Paris, I thought, was one of those very, like, delightful summer comedies. You go see it, and it's just, like, a lot of fun. It's like a lighthearted movie to go see on a Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really have any overwhelming objection to it, but, you know, you could read anything you want to anything.
This is true.
This is film studies. This is what we do for a living, right?
read things into film that are not actually there.
Maybe.
That's what my whole thesis probably is about.
What is your thesis on? You should talk about
the
that.
The influence of fathers on daughters and how growing up in an artistic household shapes the way that you make. I'm doing Sofia Coppola and a photographer by the name of Francesca Woodman. So, discussing how, what doors are open, how you rebel against that art or you embrace it, and as a lot of Sofia Coppola's films are all family oriented, and
Marie Antoinette.
Well, as far as you know, everybody in her family is working on the film.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's a family affair as far as
so sort of a
in the films production. Who's second?
Right, Roman.
Director,
what's her brother's name? Roman.
Roman Coppola.
Roman Coppola, who made that really great movie CQ that. Everybody kind of forgets about.
I do. I forgot about that.
Really? That's so much fun. I love that movie. It's like it's like a modern French New Wave movie.
So I'll be talking about that, and then also.
Well, talk about it here if you want. Consider this like your training ground for any future conferences you want to do.
Well,
or did you just do that?
No, I have a conference coming up actually.
Which one are you going to?
Oh, that horrible one in Brockport where there's like 300 people there. It's.
Oh, I'm doing Pop Culture Association of America next week in Boston.
In Boston, yes. Boston. I'm going to Brockport to talk about the use of on-screen and off-screen. Well, it's mainly the use of off-screen violence in the latest films by Michael Haneke.
Oh, okay.
So I'll be talking about...
Nice lighthearted subject.
I'll be talking about the 2007 remake of Funny Games and White Ribbon.
What did you think of the 2007 remake of Funny Games?
I loved it.
Did you see it?
I liked it. I was probably one of the only people that saw it at the North Park. It was another one of those films that was there for 1 week and gone.
I've got a better story for you. I saw it at, and I wish I saw it on a Friday night, but I saw it on a weekday night at a 16-plex by our house, which is ideal for seeing that kind of movie to multiplex, because it was one of those movies that everybody in the audience except for me hated it.
Yeah.
They all were, like, just, like, really
this
pissed
horrible.
Off. They
what
thought,
is this about?
Because it was making fun of them, in a way. Absolutely, and they couldn't handle it.
Yeah. And, you know, people always describe Haneke's films as being extremely violent, but a lot of his violence occurs off-screen, and it's what your, you know, what your disgusting mind thinks is going on is why you find these films so violent. It's because your mind is so... fraught with violent imagery and thoughts that you project them onto his films is part of his use of off-screen violence.
Okay. I'm thinking of The Piano Teacher when I saw that when I was 17 and I'm driving home from the theater going, oh my god, I gotta kill myself now, what did I just see? And then, like, literally this thought, this is like running through my head, it's like, oh my god, what have I just seen? Like, I just felt really, like, dirty and disturbed and shaken up, and then 3 days later I realized it was maybe one of the best films I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's how I felt about White Ribbon. I saw it in New York, I saw a film print of it, and it was just...
That film form?
Yeah, maybe.
That's where I saw it.
I was in New York visiting a friend and who also is a big fan of Haneke, Kelly Peterman, and so we were like, let's go see a film that will make us want to kill ourselves.
Sounds like a lovely Saturday night.
It was fabulous.
Yes. That's always always a good thing to do, is go see a movie to make you feel like you're yourself on Saturday.
But it's my first conference, so I'm...
Congratulations. There's nothing like your first conference.
It's a joke conference, but...
My first
appears that everybody that applied got in.
Yeah, my first conference was the Pop Culture Association of Canada, which so I had international cred, barely international cred. It was in Niagara Falls, Ontario.
Ah.
But it was still, you know, I had to show my passport, so it's international cred.
That's true.
But it's a weird, like, professional association to say that I'm a member of the Canadian Pop Culture Association. But it was great doing it because I was writing about Image and Desire in the movie ATL. Have you ever seen ATL with the rapper T.I.? Great movie, actually. Really great movie. And it was sort of about, like, it as a pre-Obama film, and discussing Cory Booker and sort of influential black leaders. And somebody from, you know, Saskatchewan, Regina, Saskatchewan, just really doesn't know who that is. So it all kind of got, like, a pass. Like, nobody really kind of, like...
I think
it was accurate, but like there are other ones that like people really, some of them, like there was a girl that did one about white girl booty dancing and people just weren't having it. So I mean, I was lucky that I kind of like skated by a little bit, and that like it really wasn't like deeply contested, because they were just like, oh yeah, we're from Regina, Saskatchewan, eh?
Yeah. my panel is later in the day. Probably nobody will be there. I will be talking to an empty room. But a friend of mine is also in the same panel, so...
That did happen to buddies of mine. Yeah, you kind of have to stack the deck with locals. Like, I was on a panel with some dude from Brock University at St. Catharines and some other dude from Toronto, and it was... there was people there, which was sort of scary.
Yeah.
But then I went to see a panel of three people from UB, and I hate to say this, but... It was me and another person from UB that were the audience for them.
Yeah. I mean, if nobody's there, do I have to talk? Like,
no, then you could just kind of, it's like if a tree falls in the forest, does it make a noise? You can.
Yeah, that's true.
Or, I mean, but you'll have other people there, right? You're on a panel.
Yeah, there's three other people.
So, I mean, then you'll all talk to yourselves, and then probably, like, after 20 minutes, say, let's go get some coffee and continue the conversation there at the...
Perhaps.
At Tim Hortons, instead of having to do it there, maybe.
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 I have a feeling nobody's going to be interested.
What are the other panels? You know, is it like a certain like theme? Like mine's about like emerging media and technology, or emerging film and technology.
No, there isn't. It's English and humanities, people.
Oh. Well, English,
but literally,
should be,
there's 300 people.
But I mean, everybody there probably speaks English, so they should be interested in English and humanities.
This is true. But first conference, so if nobody's there, I can fudge it up, and it'll be all right.
There, yeah, nobody will be. You know, it'll be low pressure. I mean, I've never. You know, I don't know if I've ever. I haven't really. I guess in the humanities, we really don't have like super high pressure. Like, someone's really going to call you out on it. They'll just be sort of like polite about it.
Mm-hmm.
They'll politely tell you that you have it all wrong, and that you should go back and read like Jameson or something. Like you should brush up on your Jameson, either Frederick or Jenna.
I must admit that there's a film coming out later in April.
What's that?
From a fabulous, fabulous writer. There's no sarcasm in my voice whatsoever.
It's not the new Tyler Perry movie. He's got another one.
The Lucky One.
The Lucky One. Who is that?
The new Nicholas Sparks film.
Oh, yeah. With
a little grown-up Zac Efron.
And Taylor Schilling, who...
She was in this short-lived television show that I watched and really liked about... paramedics? Or no, it was a nursing show. She was a nurse.
She was a nurse.
Just came back from Iraq.
We talk about the gigantic... Mercy.
Yeah, Mercy.
Mercy.
Big fan. Big fan of Mercy. I don't think it's on anymore. I don't think it got picked up for a second season. But Zac Efron, you know what? If he could dirty it up, he could be Christofferson. I actually think...
You think Zac Efron could pull that off?
It's a possibility. I went and saw Charlie St. Cloud. I mean, I think I did. I swear to God.
I saw, you know, my reaction to Charlie St. Cloud is like, I was like, holy shit, that son of a bitch is ripped. Meanwhile, I'm sitting there eating my large popcorn. I'm like, I gotta get back in the gym. This popcorn is so good.
And I think you'll feel that way if you see The Lucky One. But I think, you know, given the chance, I think he could do it.
Directed by Scott Hicks. He's a good filmmaker. Except for No Reservations, but we won't hold that against him.
Oh, yeah.
When the boys are back, okay, yeah, maybe not. Hearts of Atlantis, that was a good movie, Shine. No, I actually do feel bad for Taylor Schilling while we're on it, because she was in the really awful, what was it, that movie, Atlas Shrugged, Part 1. But
oh,
the reason it was... do you know the story behind it?
I think I know snippets, but go ahead and refresh me.
So the story behind Atlas Shrugged is that the producers, like two conservative d-bags or whatever, they were going to lose their rights to it. So they had to, like, rush the movie into production.
Throw a film together?
Yeah, literally within, like, 3 weeks. So they hired this, the director within 3 weeks to get the movie off the ground. And they hired Taylor Schilling, who was a little cardboard, but it's forgivable because she only had 2 days, I think, to prepare before they went to shooting it. So she was hired 2 days before. There's got to be some trivia on IMDb. I'm not making this up. But it was one of these movies that was kind of like a low-budget, kind of schlockily made. But given how it was made, I kind of can forgive it a little bit. I think there could be a really good film made out of Atlas Shrugged, although I think it's there were certain things in it that were really sort of silly. Mm-hmm. Like it sort of forgets or doesn't consider the arrival of conglomerates or like it's sort of like one of these things where you're like, it came out in that time. It was exactly last year I saw it where you're thinking to yourself like, yeah, but you know, there are organizations that are too big to fail. So like, this is where like we need to do something. It's morals were all over the place, but that's probably a relic of Ayn Rand's stuff. But apparently they were going to do a bigger movie with Angelina Jolie, your homegirl. And it's,
she's good in some things. Just, eat a goddamn sandwich or something, man. I mean, I'm not asking. 5 pounds. Just give me 5 pounds.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'm not asking for a lot. So, okay. Did you say you went and saw the Richard Linklater film, Bernie?
It only had one screening, and it was sort of like a big gala promotional screening. And then I didn't get to see it, unfortunately, at South By. But yeah, he's got a new one. I thought Bernie was actually the one that he did, and I got this confused, because he's been making a movie now for, like, 12 years.
Okay.
Where he shoots a movie, like, every, like takes off, like 2 weeks or something, and is making a movie about a kid's adolescence for 12 years now. I don't know what it's called. But I almost thought Bernie was finally that, and then I realized...
Oh, and then you realized it was Jack Black.
Yeah, but I've heard really good things about Bernie. I was down for film stage with a gentleman... Who was from Texas, and he had a very Texas accent, Bill, and he was all about Bernie, because I think he grew up near where that took place.
Okay.
And he was, like, telling me, like, how crazy that story really was, but he dug it a lot, I think. Oh, yeah, this part of me is a 3D concert movie with Katy Perry. So I will be buying my tickets in advance for that one. But, oh, Untitled 12-Year Project. So that's the Untitled 12-Year Project, in case you're wondering. It's called Untitled 12-Year Project, formerly Boyhood, with Ethan Hawke and Patricia Arquette.
What's this, this film called Hick?
Oh.
Blake Lively, Rory Culkin.
Oh, God. I saw Hick at TIFF. Is it coming out?
It's coming. It's getting a limited release in May 11th.
Who the hell picked that movie up?
Let's see.
It was... Okay, so
let me see.
Hick was a movie, and I felt... you know, it's one of these movies where I like Derek Martini. He's a good filmmaker, but Hick was just so, like, wrong... headed in every single way.
Really?
It was like sleazy and disgusting. It was like the sleazier. It's like if that's like the sleazier version of that Britney Spears movie Crossroads, which is hard to believe. And that sounds like a selling point. Like you should be able to put that on the poster and get people to buy tickets. But it was one of those movies where it dealt with it just dealt with some very nasty people in a way that it kind of was. And Eddie Redmayne is in it. He's pretty talented.
Phase 4 films.
Phase 4. Okay, Phase 4. I went to a party of theirs at South By.
Good party?
What's that?
Good party?
It wasn't... It was, you know, it was a little like... I kind of got there early and then I left early. And I was Kevin's... Because Phase 4 is teamed up. They're a Canadian company. They teamed up with Kevin Smith's Smodcast Pictures. And so it was a party that involved Kevin Smith. And I like left because I was like, oh, Kevin Smith's not going to be here. He must be... chilling out in Red Bank or something, and then all of a sudden, you know, I later found out that he was there, but, yeah, it was one of those things, but I think I had to check into a hotel or something. I had a horrible South By experience. I had to stay in 3 different hotels, the fucking interactive people. Eddie Redmayne, he, of course, was in My Week with Marilyn. That was what he was in. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Hick, I kind of blanked out Hick, because it was, I saw it at TIFF, and it was... just kind of made me feel nasty and weird afterwards, because it started off like a lighthearted comedy and you thought that's where you were. And then it gets very, very, very dark to the point of, like, not being able to be redeemed. And the way it handles certain things, like, there's... I don't want to give away, but there's a really dark, dark moment in it. And the way it handles it, in terms of just the way it's shot and the way it's, like, put together and edited and sound mixed, was just really appalling and offensive and just, like even more disturbing to me than the movie. And it, like, completely lost me.
Okay.
But it was one of those movies that I just was, it was cynical and it like didn't, like it's mix of, it was mixing all these tones and it just didn't come together. It just was not successful at all in how it was put to, in its construction. But Derek Martini's been making some good work for a couple of years now. Smiling Fish, Goat on Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Lime Life, that was good.
Yeah. I did enjoy Lime Life.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. Hick is one of those things that I probably won't come to Buffalo, so you probably won't have to worry about it.
Maybe it'll fly through on my Netflix one night, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, I remember talking to John about that film. Maybe I'll watch it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, by all means, watch it. Let me know what you think.
But I feel like the most anticipated film for people of our persuasion is the Wes Anderson film that's coming out for the summer.
You know, Wes Anderson to me is a little hit or miss.
I'm the same. There are films that I enjoy and films that I'm just not enjoying.
Like, I didn't like Steve Zissou. I thought that Life Aquatica, I was just like,
annoyed. Did not enjoy Life Aquatica. Did not enjoy Darjeeling too much.
I like Darjeeling. I mean, I didn't love it.
It was better than the, you know, Life Aquatic.
But. Life Aquatica was just a train wreck. It was just too much, like, sort of too much Godard and Fellini and not enough, like, actual substance. But no, he's good. He's good. Yeah, I mean, Moonrise Kingdom could be good. I liked his other. What was the other movie? The Claymation movie. That was fun.
Oh yeah, Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah, that was fun. It didn't really like make any money at the box office, unfortunately.
No, it didn't.
That's a shame. It was weird. There was a period there where like they were all like Spike Jones did the kids movie, that kids movie too, that I didn't really care for.
Oh, Where the Wild Things Are?
Yeah.
There's not much you can do with, I mean, the book is, you know, 20 pages. Can't, you know, I'm really fucking sick of all the Snow White movies that are,
I've heard decent things about Mirror Mirror. My other podcast, the other rotating cast member, is a big Tarsem fan. He freaking loves Tarsem, so he was all over that. I should see what he thought of it. Maybe next time. Maybe we'll do. Maybe I'll run down and see him next week, and we'll record a podcast in Auburn, live from his place.
But just imagining Kristen Stewart as a sword wielding Snow White just brings flashbacks to what's to the Robin Hood movie that was made with Kate Blanchett wielding a sword, and it was just. That film was horrible, and I'm somehow getting deja vu that Snow White and the Huntsman is going to be just as atrocious.
They should do like an inner city Snow White, like The Wiz. That's they should do next.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Can Kesha be Snow White?
I was actually thinking of the girl that was Precious.
Oh.
That might be Kesha.
I was thinking of, like, some white rapper chick.
Kesha has her charms.
She does. I'm like, she does.
I'm defending Kesha and Katy Perry. Jeez, I gotta get Mike Reif back here. Oh. What the hell is going on? This is falling off the rails. So anything else coming up? Anything else you're working on? Anything else you want to pimp?
There's nothing that I want to pander out. If you're in the Brockport area, you could come out and hear me talk about Henneke.
You should. You totally should. It's going to be good. It's going to be good.
Hopefully.
It's going to be good. And if you're in Boston, you can come see me if you're registered for the Pop Culture Association conference. Or anything else you're working on now? Any websites, Twitter feeds, anything you want to pimp?
No, I got nothing for
okay. You. Well, I'm always available at johnfinkfilms.com. And also, we're trying to put together the funding for our film, Brandonwood. We did a really great casting session. And we're kind of whittling it down for our callbacks and seeing some more folks. So, learn more about that at indiegogo.com/Brandonwood Film. And you can follow me on Twitter at @FinkJohnJ.
Thanks for having me, John.
Thank you for stopping by. Yeah, it was great. Good time. So, yeah, we'll be back soon. I'm not sure who our next guest will be. Might be Mike Reif. Might be somebody else. Might be, you know, Regis Philbin.
Getting crazy. Just
out of control. It's out of control. Regis Philbin's going to be on next. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Regis is one of those people I wish I could do a good impression of.
I don't think anybody can.
Dana Carvey does a pretty good one.
Oh, okay.
He's like, who wants to be a millionaire?
That wasn't very good.
That was my impression of Dana Carvey, the impression of Regis. Oh, man. Okay, well, thanks for listening, and check us out in our new episode in the near future. Thanks.